Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Blinds.com Cyber Monday sales event is happening now. Get some of the best deals of the season with up to 50% off site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Avoid the home renovation overwhelm. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings delivers big results, and Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Skip the long lines or waiting around at home all day just to get a quote. With Blinds.com, shopping online doesn't mean sacrificing quality, style, or service. A Blinds.com design expert can help you make the perfect selection. We can even handle everything from measure to install. Get your whole home installed for one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Shop Blinds.com Cyber Monday sales event today for some of the best deals of the season. Save up to 50% site-wide, plus premium doorbusters and a free professional measure. Up to 50% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
We're right back to WEEI.
Shyman Mego here with you on a sunny but cold Saturday afternoon. A lot of college football going on right now. Clemson, South Carolina battling it out right now. 7-7 in that one.
Are you more into this because of the expanded playoff? Because my husband, all of a sudden, he's from New England, so he doesn't have the like innate college football obsession that, say, people I grew up with do. And he's way more into it this year because of the implications of these late games.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
I'm way more into college basketball than I've ever been.
How?
I don't know. It's just like all I've... Maybe it's in part due to I've enjoyed gambling on them and had
some
success.
Are you a UConn fan or something?
Yeah. So I went to UConn for 2 years before I transferred out. Love UConn basketball. I was there for the Kemba Walker national title.
That was
a lot of fun.
Cardiac Kemba.
Oh, it was, that moment was amazing. I'll never forget that moment. But... So I love UConn. I love rooting for UConn in the tournament, but just like in general, like I've loved watching college basketball. I don't know what it is. I've been like addicted. I have been far more into college basketball than college football lately, which is weird.
I've like loved college basketball since 2009.
That's totally fair. Yeah,
2011. Like, I don't know. Once you're away from it and you're up here, it's just a little tougher.
Yeah, I love all these like beginning of the season tournaments and stuff, like the Maui Invitational, and I'm so into it. I don't know what it is. Again, it may in part be because I've had some gambling success, but at the same time, like I've never been into college basketball.
A bunch of the Feast Week games were great this week
too. Oh my God, some of these games were awesome. The overtime game for Gonzaga and was at West Virginia the other night. excellent, excellent game. I was like watching it. I was watching a stream of it on my phone from London. I was like, this game is awesome.
You really are into it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I was, yeah. And that was from a guy who barely was able to watch any Thanksgiving football. It is. It's not easy to watch football over there in London. I got to be completely honest.
What do you mean? I would think that they have a big presence because of the London games that they've had for so long now.
You would think that. Not as easy as you'd think. Like, you have to find specific, almost like Americanized sports bars.
Okay.
Which are few and far between that have, like, NFL direct TV or, like, NFL ticket in order to watch the games. Most bars just, like, won't have them. And so I needed to... And, like, you can't access your own YouTube TV or, you know, like, Peacock or anything from London because it's different in the UK than it is in the US. And so, like, I couldn't watch half of the Thanksgiving games.
Did you watch the game yesterday?
So
Black
I watched
Friday game?
Part of it because I was on the plane. Wi-Fi wasn't great, which I sent a very stern email about it. Paid money for Wi-Fi and it wasn't good. But I watched some of it when I could.
It was an infuriating ending.
Yeah, the ending was insane. I don't know.
This Chiefs team is not good.
No, they're terrible.
They are not a good team.
They're terrible.
If you just watch over the last four or five games, they're not a good team. They have no business winning these games, even against the Raiders on the other side who have nothing, although Brock Bowers looks awesome.
He is amazing. But if you had dropped in, just like if you found an alien in space that had never heard of football, you dropped them in and you said, this is the greatest sport on the planet, and this guy's the greatest quarterback we have, and you show him Patrick Mahomes tape, but only of this season, do you think he'd believe you?
I think the alien would say, why do they keep cutting to that blonde woman in the box?
that they probably would.
What is the importance of this blonde lady in the red shirt?
And that's the thing that frustrates me, too, about like the Mahomes-Brady comps. Because like it never felt like Brady had a season like this, where he was just unable to do, it feels like, anything.
Maybe
like, you can't even score
the
20 points on
maybe
the
like
Vegas
the
Raiders.
End of 2019. Was a little like that.
But even still, they were 12-4. I guess that's fair.
That's what
yeah.
I'm saying. Where yeah. you're like, this team's
most
not good.
Ain't no quarterback.
They keep winning because the other teams in the league that they're seeing are so bad and they shoot themselves in the foot.
So it took him like 20 years to finally have a season where it was like,
And that's the difference between Mahomes and Brady.
That's wild to me. Yeah, they are miles apart still. Anybody who argues otherwise is wrong. But in terms of horrible coaching decisions, you mentioned the Raiders, which is just a masterclass by Antonio. Not to go on another tangent, but it is hilarious how all those guys, Max Crosby, if Antonio Pierce doesn't become my head coach, I want to trade.
Right.
And now Antonio Pierce is your head coach, and it is a dumpster fire. Josh McDaniels had a better winning percentage than Antonio Pierce, by the way. And you look at that, and then you go to the New England Patriots, and it feels like Jerod Mayo hasn't been all that much better. Like, there have been a lot of bad decisions out of Jerod Mayo. He may have the temperature of the locker room. Like, he may have the players kind of on his side for the most part. Like, I felt like they responded to the soft comments earlier in the year. But, I mean, overall, what he has done on the field leaves a lot to be desired, at least for me. Like, I'm curious, do you feel the same way?
So, my frustration with Jerod Mayo as a head coach so far has just been from watching somebody learn on the job.
Absolutely.
And feeling like
he's
that's
unbelievably inexperienced.
Like that's a force that they didn't need to have. It's one thing to say, we're blowing everything up, Bill's out the door, we still have to figure out stuff long term with our front office, but we're committed to Jerod Mayo. It's clear to me that it's a little early for him. Like, do I think that he has the makeup and everything to be a great head coach in the future? I do. Like, I still believe that. It's just what's hurting him right now is learning week to week. And it's trial and error every Sunday. And I think especially the way that the season started in Cincinnati, like, you looked at that and you went, oh, wow, like, he is a baby Bill.
Yeah,
like, look
way
how he
better
wins.
Than you thought they'd be.
This team has totally bought in. They don't have a lot of talent.
Defense
but they're
was
gonna,
flying around.
They're going to go out there. They're going to execute. They're not going to shoot themselves in the foot. They're going to be smart. They're going to be competent. And they're going to be able to get Drake May out there. And this is not going to be such a bad situation. And then it's veered so far from that. And I do think losing guys like Bentley, and we'll see. I think Peppers will probably be back tomorrow. But either way, like,
okay.
You lose guys who are leaders, especially on defense. that does make a huge difference because those are your lieutenants. Those
Definitely.
Are the guys who are carrying out your messaging. But the thing that's so frustrating to me is it's not just Gerard. You surround him with all these other people who are learning on the job.
Yes.
And it's like everybody is trying to raise a barn together, like, you know, like some Amish Thanksgiving
and they've
thing
never
or something.
Built anything in their
and
lives.
Yeah, and they've never even like constructed a birdhouse.
They watched someone one time build a birdhouse. They're like,
and
we
again,
can build a barn.
I don't think it's like it's not personal, and it doesn't mean that I don't think that Gerard Mayo is a good coach or can be a good coach mm-hmm. or has good weeks, more struggling weeks. He certainly got outmatched against Sean McVay. Like that's where you saw the biggest gap in experience.
Definitely.
And judgment and just being out
there.
Even
against Mike McDaniel. Like, McDaniel yeah. was, all, like, outcoached him left,
well,
right, and center.
Well, with Mike McDaniel, it was like, okay, your defense looked fully unprepared for the one thing that McDaniel has been doing the entire time he's in Miami, which is all this pre-snap motion window dressing,
and
as
they
you call
said
it
on the broadcast. They're like, yeah, Miami's bread and butter has been quick and intermediate passes over the middle of the mm-hmm. field. And yet they've really struggled to do that this year because teams have taken it away. And yet somehow, some way, the Patriots had zero interest in taking it away. Jaylen Waddle had been nigh on invisible all season. And then all of a sudden, boom, plays the Patriots and he's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, they're the get right team. And I've been saying that for weeks now. But so that's where I'm at with Gerard Mayo. Do I think that he's lost the locker room? I don't. And
no.
Talking to those guys, especially on the defense, a lot of those guys really, really believe in Mayo and they want it to work. Mm-hmm. I just think that they don't know who they are. They have no direction and they're not very disciplined and they're not very smart when they're on the field. I'm not saying they're not disciplined like they're getting wild or anything outside of the locker room. I just mean that when they're on the field, the discipline is not there. They don't understand. They don't appear to be on the same cadence at times on offense. Like they make these really stupid mistakes. And to me, yeah, Gerard Mayo said when they cross the white line, there's not that much I can do for them. But part of it is you're supposed to be setting this culture, and that's one of the big reasons that you were named this successor to Bill Belichick years ago, seemingly.
Yeah, and there is some truth in that, like when they do cross the white lines, like the players have to make the plays
yeah.
a lot of the time. Like those receivers dropping the football, I mean, there's only so much Gerard Mayo can do about that.
But it's you like have to set the expectation. Like, I don't know what kind of house you grew up in, Shime. Mm-hmm. My house, report card day was scary.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was a scary day depending on how it was going. Like, yeah. when you get that report card, is it going to be a tough dinner? Or mm-hmm. is it going to be, okay, good job?
Yep.
And I had friends who I would go to their house and it's like, oh, you got a bunch of C's and D's? Try better next time. Anyway, like, moving
pat
on.
Pat them on the back and keep them
yeah.
moving.
Yeah. And that's a little bit
more. Are you
more
the oldest in your?
No, I'm middle child.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So as the oldest, I felt that like times 10. It was always like and then I would look at it and you're not doing the same thing for them. Like, what are you doing? Why yeah. why do I get all this?
Oh,
and they don't.
If you have like a littlest, like my brother had radically different parents. My parents were burnt out.
Yeah. My two brothers are twins. They are 3 years younger than me. And every time I'd be like, what the hell is this? You're treating them like this? Why do they not get the same criticism I got here?
But that's the way that I think it is with the locker room, where
yeah.
it's not even just saying like, oh, Gerard's not tough enough. I just don't think that anybody really understands how to win week to week and the level of discipline that takes. And losing is so much easier. And that's how it feels down there right now.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, too. Like, when you look at, you brought up Sean McVay, too, and how he outcoached Gerard Mayo. When he first came into the league as a 31-year-old head coach, the youngest the league had ever seen. So he was as green as you could possibly be. What did they do? They hired Wade Phillips to be his defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
A guy who had been in the league for decades at that point. I mean, he had been the head coach of the Denver Broncos in the early 90s. That's how long he had been around. And so they come in, he's like, hey, you take care of the defense, show me the ropes a little bit, help me be a better head coach. And now Sean McVay, I mean, 6 years in, is unquestionably one of the best coaches in football.
And I think that they wanted that to be McAdoo behind the scenes, to be this kind of somebody who's steering the ship a little bit in terms of helping out a first-time head coach, helping out developing Drake May.
McAdoo's only been a coach like once before himself, though, right? And
it was
a short stint with the Giants.
That's where I think they felt like somebody could bring in some experience. But otherwise, I mean, even just down to the linebackers, you got Hightower coaching the linebackers, you got a first-time special teams coach and Jeremy Springer, you got Alex Van Pelt, who's never really been a play caller before this year, has been a coordinator before and is seemingly great with Drake and great with quarterbacks.
Definitely.
But again, it's just he also doesn't seem to have this personality where he's going to be somebody who is tough on you. Like, yeah. He's a very even-keeled, seemingly very fair, calm guy. Mm-hmm. And that's great, but I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of, like, fire and brimstone with that.
Well, so that
kind
of bugs me then. Like, I look at, and a lot of people were calling for a guy like Mike Vrabel to be the next head coach, and then they didn't do an interview process, and they just hired Gerard Mayo. But, I mean, Vrabel's just being a consultant for the Browns. Mm-hmm. You couldn't have called him and been like, hey, I know you're going to get a head coaching job eventually anyway, so do you want to just be a consultant with your former team and help out our rookie head coach become a coach?
I wonder if that would be awkward. Because, you know, like between him and Mayo, and Mayo's trying to have this authority, and Vrabel's been a head coach before. And
yeah, but that's
has
why he's a
same attachment.
Consultant. I mean, Ed McAdoo's been a head coach before.
Yeah, but
and
he doesn't
comes
have
in
the
and
attachment to the Patriots. In
sure,
the same way.
I guess that's fair, but I just, okay, so maybe there was somebody else out there, though, that you could have brought in and been like, hey, come in and help our young coach. Like, is there another, former head coach out there that would be interested in doing something like that? Like, it's, I don't know. I even look at Bill O'Brien at BC. I mean, his coaching staff is full of guys who have been NFL head coaches, mm-hmm. and that's at Boston College.
Well, and Chad,
this is the New England Patriots.
Isn't such a big part of this that they pushed out Bill earlier than they've said, earlier than they plan to, because now they're paying his contract mm-hmm. this year. It was a 2-year contract. But also, it's such a lack of creativity
and
a lack of networking around the NFL, because basically all they could hire from was Cleveland and Green Bay. And that's all that they could go to, because that's the only people that they knew that weren't in the Patriots for the last 25 years.
But,
and that's the problem, really, with the way that they decided to have Bill go last year, is that they did it a year early. They seemingly didn't even know from his front office who was going to stay and who was going to go, because they didn't know if Bill was going to get a job at Atlanta or somewhere else, and he's going to pluck half the front office guys. So they were literally just going, flying by the seat of their pants for this offseason, and just basically looking at this year and going, well, it's going to be rough, but we have Mayo and we have a rookie quarterback, and that's kind of what the year's about.
Yeah, but at the same time, you don't need to hire somebody you know. I think that's the larger issue.
But I think they want to. I think that's what they did.
I think that's the bigger issue. Is it's like, you don't have to hire somebody you know.
No.
Find somebody with experience.
Interviews.
Yes. It's not that hard. It's really
interviews.
It's this cool thing that every job in America does, where they have an interview process and somebody submits
every job.
Most jobs in America submit resumes.
There are also a lot of jobs where it's like, hey, do you know anybody who would be good for this?
Yeah, but
it seems like that's all they did. And they said, let's get somebody from the Packers. Let's get somebody.
We talked about the Targaryens earlier. This seems too incestuous.
Yeah.
Like, you need to reach outside of your organizational ties and be a little uncomfortable and, like, interview people from outside that have never been affiliated with the New England Patriots.
Well, even with the offensive coordinator position, though, they go through a dozen guys to try to get. Nobody wanted to come over here. You stink. Like, you didn't have anything to offer right now. And so maybe that will change this year. And I know we got to go to break to pay some bills. On the other side, I think we should talk about Mayo's second year, which I assume is going to happen. It would be really, really difficult to see him not getting a second year, and what they should do around him, because you can't carry every guy over. And even if DeMarcus Covington is supposedly getting head coaching job opportunities, interesting. But we got to talk about what they got to do on the other side.
617-779-7937. We'll continue with the Gerard Mayo conversation coming up. But right now, Zach Coe is going to get you caught up with what's trending here at WEEI.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
The Celtics kept their NBA Cup hopes alive last night with a 138-129 win over the Bulls in Chicago. Jason Tatum led the way with 35 points. Peyton Pritchard posted a season-high 29 points, including 19 in the fourth quarter. Celtics will need Orlando to beat the Knicks in order to have a chance to advance as the Eastern Conference wild card on point differential. Next up for the Celtics is just a regular season matchup in Cleveland with the Cavs. That one goes down tomorrow night, tip off at 6 p.m. Charlie Coyle got things started for the Bruins with a goal in the first 2 minutes of the game, and that's all the Bruins would get. They fell at home to the Penguins 2-1, your final. Next up for the Bees is a Centennial Game matchup with the Montreal Canadiens. That one's slated for tomorrow. Puck drop set for 3 p.m. from the Garden. Final preparations underway for the Patriots' Week 13 matchup against the Colts. Team has already ruled out guard Cole Strange as he works his way back from knee surgery. Wide receiver DeMario Douglas, safeties Kyle Duggar and Jabril Peppers, and defensive end Dietrich Wise are among those listed as questionable. Pats and Colts kick off from Gillette tomorrow afternoon at 1. Final week of the college football regular season underway. Among the notable games today, Michigan is at Ohio State, Alabama hosting Auburn, Texas A&M hosting Texas, and the Boston College Eagles facing off with the Pitt Panthers. Don't forget, you can hear coverage of that BC game right here on WEEI starting at 2:30 with pregame and kickoff from Alumni Stadium set for 3 o'clock. My name is Zach Coe. That's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Shime and Mego coming up after this.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go.
Wherever you go.
Just download the Odyssey app.
We're right back to it on WEEI.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The one I land on, though, is resigned. Like, I think that they understand where they're at. Like, they understand that it's going to take a while. And I think the reality of, look, this was always going to be a multi-offseason rebuild has hit them in the face. And so you're resigned to where you are. You had too many holes at too many premium positions to get it done in short order. And this is a transition year. And I think a lot of people around here have talked about this as if it's year two of the rebuild. It's not. It's year one. And so you're certainly not out of the woods yet. And I think the Crafts are resigned to that right now.
This is Boston Sports Original WEEI, Shime and Mega with you. You just heard Burt Breer. Resignation is an interesting feeling sometimes. And if the Crafts are feeling that way with Gerard Mayo as their head coach, it's not necessarily a great spot to be in because you know things aren't going very well and you're just hoping that they get better, even though there's a big question mark as to if they actually will or not.
Yeah. So when they say a multi-year rebuild, how do you translate that from a season's standpoint?
Yeah. So heading into the season, I expected it to be a multi-year rebuild.
But is that 2 years? Is that three?
So in the third year, you should be a playoff contender was kind of my you should be a legitimate playoff team, and then maybe not necessarily a contender for the Super Bowl, but you should be able to make the playoffs and at least contend in a playoff game.
I got to be honest. I thought that if you had the quarterback in Drake May, mm-hmm. that you should at least be sniffing the playoffs in the second year.
Yeah. So
now that feels like a huge leap that this team would have to make.
Do you think it's going to be a huge leap to get to the playoffs this year? I mean, I just look around the AFC this year and it's really there's six teams that are good. Mm-hmm. And then that seven spot is just entirely up for grabs and it could be a 9-8 team. And so with a second year of Drake May, maybe some offseason signings and a couple of draft picks. Like, they couldn't get to like 9 wins next year.
I just find it so hard to, and this isn't even about the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. When you look at the roster, what's out there around Drake,
yeah.
is the cupboard is bare.
Definitely.
Like, they're really, you got one big, nice turkey sitting there in Drake May, and then you got nothing else. You've got like a salt shaker and, I don't know, like a packet of instant mashed potatoes that you can use in Mario Douglas.
Hey, Courtney loves her instant mashed potatoes. But it's interesting, like, people have tried to say, like, Bo Nix doesn't have anything, and then the chart came out. I think it was one of Ben Baldwin's charts, where it's just all the offensive lines graded, and they're at 32. The Patriots have next basically a zero grade. The Denver Broncos offensive line, 100. they could not have gotten a higher rating, which is insane to me. And I think that is one of the biggest issues with this team. I think you can make an offense work with limited receiver talent.
Right.
But if you're limited at receiver and awful on the offensive line, it is a recipe for disaster no matter who the quarterback is.
Well, and
is.
I know that we love looking at the grades. Like, I like looking at PFF. I don't, you've got to take it with a grain of salt.
Definitely.
But I like looking and seeing all the different ratings. At the same time, none of this passes the eye test. You see receivers where I talked to Kendrick Bourne about this the other day, and I think Kendrick Bourne is a pretty good receiver. Like, he should be a solid three on most teams. And he's talking about the struggle that Alex Van Pelt talked about too, of these receivers just getting on the same page with Drake May. Like, they can't even really understand, seemingly. He says Drake understands the receiver's body language in terms of the routes and the changes that they're going to make on the fly, but that's not necessarily a two-way street. And that just goes to show you, it's not even just about the physical talent, because you see somebody like Javon Baker, you see somebody like Kayshon Booty.
Even Pop Douglas, this has been an issue.
These are guys that, you know, like, have the physical attributes, but there's something that is not clicking. And some of that can be coaching, but some of it is also just, when you don't have chemistry and you don't have it there, it's really hard to just, like, turn that around in 1 year. And maybe you find a great draft pick in terms of receiver talent. I would look at the line first 1,000%. Yeah. I know that's very boring from an opinion, but I think that you've been neglecting it for so long that now it's like, I mean, you just have
it
to
It is a disaster. I mean, you just cut your starting left guard. That's how bad your offensive line is.
And you put him back on the practice squad.
Yeah,
so.
But he's still not on the roster, technically.
I mean, most of your line, a lot of your offense, are practice squad guys.
Yeah, that's they the would level be practice squad guys on any other team.
So that's where, I mean, and I know we need to talk about the coaching more, but that's where when I say a multi-year rebuild, that to me scares me on the one hand, because I'm thinking, is that going to affect how they feel about spending in free agency next year?
Well, and because I don't know how confident they are in Elliott Wolf.
They should
be. I'm not confident in him.
Well, if they say to Elliott Wolf, you can go out and you can outbid. Like, we just need this guy. We just need that guy. We need some real high-end talent, and we need to hit. We need known commodities that we can get through free agency or trades, so you have the agency to do that. I just don't know. We hear so much about how they have the third most cap space going into the next offseason as we sit here today. Are they going to use it?
Well, they had all that cap space this year, and they came out and told you that the guys weren't worth it.
And they said the wide receiver market wasn't where anybody wanted it to be.
Compared to what your team is, of course those guys are worth it.
Yeah.
Like, Jonah Williams, Jonah Jackson were two free agents on the offensive line. Either of those guys are exponentially better than anything that you have on the offensive line. Like, yeah, you can spout that you signed the best offensive lineman in free agency by re-signing Mike Onwenu, but that doesn't do anything for me when the rest of your offensive line is, as you said, practice squad.
And
guys.
Here's where the coaching comes into it as well, because with Mike Onwenu, that's a guy that has been frustrated by getting moved all over the damn
100%.
Line.
He just wants to play right guard.
He just wants to play right guard. And you gave him tackle money, and that's a decision you made, and he ate himself into looking like a tackle, not to be mean, but he looks like a tackle, and he's playing guard. And they tried the other week, they're putting him on the other side of the line. And he's like, I talked to him about it. How do you feel about that? Last time you did this was years ago. You haven't even practiced at it. And he said, yeah, last time it didn't go so good.
Well, this is also a team that plans on trying Cole Strange at center. And I am a draft nerd, huge draft nerd. So I love the Senior Bowl, Reese's Senior Bowl. Shout out to Nagy over there. Does a great job.
Are you saying Reese's or Reese's?
I'm generally a Reese's guy.
I like that. That's authentic.
Yeah, it's Reese's Pieces, not Reese's Pieces. That's dumb. I love the Senior Bowl. Cole Strange took snaps at the Senior Bowl at center. I highly, highly, highly recommend anybody just go watch them.
Oh, no.
He just gets destroyed.
It's a horror movie.
You love horror movies.
Yeah, I do.
It would be one of the best horror movies you've seen in 2024.
Okay.
It would be.
That troubles me a lot.
Yes. It should.
Because they definitely want to play him there. So
And
that's where
you should just roll with Ben Brown at this point. 617-779-7937. John in the car wants to weigh in on the Pats coaching. What's up, John?
Hey, always a good opportunity to talk to you too. The coaching staff stuff is really confounding, especially you know, I think it goes back to this thing where they're trying to outdo the Red Sox again and steal that thing of, like, we have to win the PR war first. That's the most important thing. And the most recent example of it is, you know, Mayo this week trying to prove that he was smart, saying, hey, I called up my game manager to see, like, hey, we would have called time out there, right? Or we wouldn't have messed up like that. So, like, they have this thing where they always have to win it. And, Mego, you brought it up earlier, like, the assistant coaches they have are because nobody wanted to come work here. So I look at this and say, okay, they've said Mayo needs more help in order to be a better, you know, head coach. So where are these assistant coaches that they're going to find to give him this magical help to make this team better next year? I don't see where that happens. Like, I don't see who they're going to go out, especially when they need to find their guys who they know, instead of, like, getting people outside of the organization who they don't know who might actually be good. Which is why I go back to the, why are we doing this? Like, to get a head coach who needs help to be a head coach because he doesn't have any experience. Why don't they just get somebody who can coach the team and manage the team instead of, like, trying to get some help for some guy who can't establish a culture of winning at all, it seems like, at the moment.
I appreciate the call,
like,
John.
Like, whatever.
I think a lot of people feel very similarly to you, especially the people that wanted a guy like Mike Vrabel, who had experience.
It's really frustrating to watch someone learn on the job.
It's so frustrating. It's so difficult, too, especially when, like, any dude who's ever played Madden or anybody who's ever played Madden in their life is like, call a timeout! Like, clock management, like, just play once. And it's like, I know when to call a timeout and how to use my timeouts, but you're not doing
sense.
It. Yeah, it's
common
sense.
It's not even game management. It's common sense.
It's wild to me that you have to learn this much on the job. And I understand that you want to hire people that, like, you're familiar with, but at the same time, like, it comes to a point where you just have to look, whether it's to the college game or guys who even have a lot of experience in the NFL but maybe haven't been associated with a team very much recently. I mean, hell, the Raiders brought in Norv Turner to help with their offense. Norv Turner hasn't done anything in the NFL in, like, a decade. You have to sometimes just look outside of your normal little comfortable box.
Well, I think we both know what the most obvious move would be. If you're assuming that the Giants have just completely given up on their season,
it's hire
and
Brian
that
Daboll's
out. Bring Daboll in for anything. Like, anything.
Absolutely.
Have him be the assistant head coach. Have him be the offensive coordinator. I'm sorry. Like I said before, I think Alex Van Pelt is a great guy, and he's done really well with the quarterbacks.
Daboll,
but
also
if you can have Daboll in there, just throw him in there. That's the kind of move that I hear sometimes people compare it to what the Celtics did with Joe Mazzulla, mm-hmm. where Joe Mazzulla had a lot of development, we'll say,
yes.
Learned a lot on the job in his first season, comes back the next season. They beefed up the assistant coaching staff around him so much. Sam Cassell does so much with those guys. Mm-hmm. And then you get in a situation where...
was it Brennan Lee, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But again, like... They also, the more important thing was they added even more talent to that roster.
Well, and I think that's the big difference is Mazzulla was learning on the job for a team that could overcome his deficiencies.
He was on his learner's permit driving a Ferrari.
Yes.
And they said, you know what? Why don't we get you a Maserati instead?
Yeah.
And then he said, okay.
And then he had his actual license. And it's
right.
Like, oh, I know how to do this now. I don't need somebody else in the car explaining it to me.
Right now, they're learning in, like, a broken down Geo Tracker like I learned in the aughts, trying to parallel park that thing. Like
they're trying to parallel park in London, driving on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
Okay, so we both assume that Jerod Mayo is going to be back next year,
yes.
because of the dedication that it seems like the Crafts have to him. Maybe you think that there's financial implications. I don't want to pay somebody else. I don't want to be paying Belichick and then
they can't be paying
Jerod
Mayo that much anyways, right?
Right, and so, I mean, I would guess not. It's his first head coaching job. But what do you do then to help him along so it's not another year of learning on the job?
Yeah, I mean, it is incumbent on the Crafts to step out of their comfort zone, right? They have to go find, I mean, there's guys like Norv Turner all over the place. Help, the Jets are
Norv Turner's hanging out of your ears.
The Jets are hiring the 33rd team to help them with, like, their GM and head coaching search in the offseason. Like, you can do stuff that isn't normal. And I'm not telling you to hire some random like NFL stats organization like PFF.
What are you going to do when they bring in two lacrosse coaches? I should say two more lacrosse coaches with Mike Pellegrino.
But, I mean, there's guys everywhere. I mean, Gruden's now working at Barstool. Go get him. I bet he'd be happy to be back in football.
I bet he likes working at Barstool.
I bet he does,
too. A lot of these guys, they get
feeling
to the media.
Feeling really nice.
They get to the media and they go, I don't have to work that hard at this. This is a lot easier than coaching.
Yeah, you're probably right, but like, there's guys like that out there. Whether it's the Norv Turners or the John Grudens of the world or whoever. Like,
but again,
find Mike Mularkey. He's got to be kicking around somewhere. He's been in the NFL for
those
decades.
Guys have to want to work here. You have to give their
guys
financial.
Without jobs generally will take it.
Some of these guys they're still getting paid from situations that they lost their job.
But there's also guys that are. I don't want to use the word. The word disgraced feels too negative, but there are more like.
They're embattled in their reputation.
Yeah, like a guy. You can bring in a guy who was a head coach, flamed out horribly, but had experience being a head coach. Like, I mean, again, I hate to bring back up BC, but like Bill O'Brien has Rob Chudzinski on his staff, who flamed out miserably in Cleveland. Like, he's still a good coach with experience. You can bring in guys like that to help you along and to be like, hey, these are decisions I made. I recommend not doing those things. It's that simple. It's like, hey, let's avoid that. It worked horribly for me in the past. I feel like just that alone would be a step in the right direction at this point.
Do you want to grab a call from Nick before we run to break?
Yeah, Nick in the car. What do you got?
So I think it's funny. I think Bob Kraft's attempt to get into the Hall of Fame and how the Patriots are playing are all so tied together so well. I'll give you an example. He didn't let Mayo pick his coaches. He basically picked them for them. He wouldn't name Elliott Wolf GM until after the draft, which in my opinion was he wanted to make sure he picked whoever he wanted, probably Drake May. And the thing is, whenever Bob Kraft whenever the Patriots do well, like in the beginning of the season, Bob Kraft basically runs people over to get in front of a microphone to brag about, oh, I spotted him 5 years ago, and I'm awful, I'm awesome, awesome. And then a few weeks ago when they weren't doing so well, the mysterious leak started to come out. Well, we had some doubts about him in camp. What a weasel. Have some backbone. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Jerry Jones, but if Jerry Jones can say that Mike McCarthy's got a chance for an extension, which nobody believes, how hard would it be for Robert Kraft to come out and say, I've got total faith in Gerard. I think he's going to do a great job. He could have done the same thing for Belichick last year, but it's all about him. So, Bob, take a dose of humble pie. Stop telling the world how wonderful and smart you are, and stop giving credit to Brady, Belichick, everybody but you, and you'll be in the Hall of Fame. You deserve to be there, but everybody hates you. That's why.
All right, Nick, thanks for the call. I mean, pretty aggressive, but you know, not aggressive, but realistic at times. Like, it's just, it's hard to look at the situation and not think that the Krafts wanted to make a lot of the decisions in the offseason.
What is such a tough beat for the Krafts right now, and it doesn't have to do with the Hall of Fame. I fully believe that's some kind of personal vendetta that somebody has against Kraft over there.
I would agree.
That's pretty obvious, but the tough beat for the Krafts with this offseason is they were so eager to show everybody that they, quote, got their franchise back because Bill Belichick was gone, and it's been so disorganized.
So it's unbelievably
been messy.
Disorganized.
It's been really, really messy, and that's a really bad look. So you say, okay, we got our franchise back, and we're the ones who are running the ship now, even though we want our football people to do the football things. It's just a big mess, and that's, again, we start off this segment with the clip from Burt Breer on Early Edition saying this is the first year of the rebuild. Yes, it is, but it's the second rebuild that you're going through now. So there's
And the first one didn't work.
You keep telling people to be patient and that it's going to be a multi-year rebuild and they're resigned to that. You're getting up to looking at if this is going to be a multi-year rebuild. You're getting close to a lost decade of football after people got used to 2 decades of being the most dominant team in the history of professional sports. So that's tough.
617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in. We'll continue with the Patriots conversation. Coming up next, it's Shyman Mego right here on Boston Sports Original, WEEI.
We're back.
Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
Boston Sports Original, WEEI, Shime and Mega with you on this Saturday afternoon. A lot of college football going on. It's nice and cool out, maybe a little chilly to some.
It's seasonal.
Yeah, you're right. It is seasonal. Just like that Christmas tree in here. I got to tell you, I love this.
It smells so good.
It's so nice.
Shime, Who's going to water that Christmas tree?
Courtney is every single day.
Okay, she is?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's responsible about this?
She's so anxious about it lighting on fire that she will water it every day.
It's a gorgeous tree.
Beautiful.
And it's lit. I mean, how tall is
James
that?
Did a great job picking
it up. It's a perfect fit for the room.
What is that, like 8 feet, 9 feet?
But knowing how radio stations operate, I'm very nervous that anyone is going to take
it. Well, so it's really simple. So the wonderful people who helped bring the tree in, I forget who they were, but they also supplied an instrument that's like a giant funnel that you can just stick into the bottom of the tree. So you don't even have to like get down underneath the tree to water it. You just stick the funnel in and you pour the water into the funnel and it goes in and down to the bottom of the tree and boom. Done.
All of a sudden the tree looks like you at UConn.
Yeah. Flourishing. Well, actually the last Christmas tree I saw at UConn was on fire, but that's a whole different
story. What's that story?
Well, at the post national championship, people were just finding things that could light on fire. And I watched, a couch and then a Christmas tree.
Well, at that point of the year, that thing goes up fast.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was dry as can be.
That thing was toast. And you're a real Christmas tree guy.
I love a real Christmas tree. Mm-hmm. I haven't, unfortunately, had a real Christmas tree in quite some time.
Why?
We just have like a dinky little fake tree. We don't celebrate Christmas at our house most of the time. We're going somewhere across the nation at some random point. And so we never really invested in one. And again, I am not one to necessarily upkeep a plant every single day. Lauren can now because she has a million plants, but I cannot be responsible for watering it. I would forget.
The real Christmas tree is so much better.
It's so nice. It's fun to go get.
It smells wonderful when it settles in, but everything else around it is just awful.
The upkeep, the needles falling down and constantly having to vacuum.
Yeah.
Like all that is just a nightmare.
I would do it, but my dog gets into a lot of mischief and I just worry about what
she would
do with
that tree.
How old is your dog now? She's almost 4.
Oh, wow. Nice.
She's not a puppy. Everyone thinks she's a puppy. She's not.
Yeah.
She's just a husky.
Yeah.
So she has a lot of her own ideas.
Very energetic.
She has a lot of her own ideas.
They're always puppies.
She's an independent dog. She is. It's true. All dogs are puppies.
Yeah. Henry doesn't touch the Christmas tree, which is nice. But yeah, we just have like a small little dinky
one. I bet she wouldn't, but I'm a helicopter dog parent, so I can't. I'm just not going to risk it.
I get that. Yeah. I'm the tough parent that needs to put the foot down, so I don't. So I would not allow for it.
Oh, so you're like a disciplinarian with the dog.
Well, not disciplinarian, but I'm the one that has to say no.
Okay. But I feel like this is a lot of dog parent relationships where the dog mom is kind of like, no, this is my baby.
Yeah, super helicopter, this is my baby. Don't, you know, I'm going to give him
like
whatever
Kraft
he wants.
Is with Gerard.
Yeah, very
like,
similar. Look at
this
that.
Is one of my
like,
sons.
Great segue. Yeah, it feels like to him, this is one of his sons. And it's just, but the issue is there's no other parent to put his foot down and be like, no, Bob, we have to get him some help. I understand he's your favorite son, but he needs help.
Don't you want your son to flourish?
It's like a young child with ADHD. You need to just help him figure out how to manage it and then move on and grow with his life. And he'll be good.
So you were looking up some names at the break.
Yes.
And you're thinking about recruiting now
on
behalf of the Crafts.
Can I throw some names at you? Let's see here. How would you feel
I'm going to grade them on a scale of 1 to 10.
Okay.
1 being super barf, just can't picture it.
Yep.
10 being home run, they should sign that person.
Okay, and it's going to span the whole spectrum here. Offensive, defensive, special teams, okay? So first name I got for you, Adam Gase.
I'd say that's a 7. I would feel pretty strong
about Adam Gase.
That. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Adam Gase got a little bit of an unfair shake, and I think that he would fit in well.
Yeah, I think a lot of these guys too. Like they.
It's the NFL. Head coaches get fired all the time.
Yeah, I used the word "quote unquote" disgraced, but like these guys can get jobs again, and they're generally better a lot of times the second time around, especially when they don't have as much responsibility.
You've learned a lesson, hopefully.
Exactly.
You're Josh McDaniels.
Another name for you. Currently, the offensive coordinator at Boise State, but experienced NFL. Head coach and offensive coordinator Dirk Cutter.
I'm like a 5 there.
Okay,
just because I'm more Juan Dable.
Okay, so. Fair. Yeah, I would be fine with that. What about Boomer Esiason's buddy Frank Reich?
Again, this is it's not the worst, but
a lot of people gave him credit for that Eagles Super Bowl win.
Closer to like a 6 there.
Okay,
I'm not as high as I am on Gase, but I'm not as lukewarm.
Okay, what about a man who, when asked about his decision to not call a timeout, simply said, I don't know, Anthony Lynn?
No.
No?
That's like a 3.
No interest. Okay.
You can't go with Anthony Lynn. I'm sorry. I don't know is not an appropriate answer.
Fair. Understandable.
And we've seen what Anthony Lynn does with a Justin Herbert style quarterback, and I don't think we need to go.
Hey, they won 12 games 1 year under Anthony Lynn.
Okay.
Yeah, 1 year. Okay, how about this? What about a guy you're very familiar with?
Mm-hmm.
What, a guy like Jay Gruden?
No.
No? I mean, he worked with Sean McVay a couple years ago. He's just kind of been around.
No is not a number. I'll say a two.
A two, okay.
Yeah. Some of these guys have too much stink on them.
That's tough. Would you try and bring Pete Carroll back to football?
No. That's a one.
I don't think he'd want to come here.
Pete Carroll, like, I also feel like if you tried to call Pete Carroll, don't you feel like he's probably out cycling in one of those stupid little outfits right now?
Oh, definitely.
Now? And he, like, has a Bluetooth hook
chomping
on
a piece
ear.
Of gum?
Yeah.
Totally... Hanging out with kids. Hello, fellow kids.
No, you don't do that.
Rex Ryan's trying to make a return to football. You want to bring him in?
That's a two for me.
Two? What about Jim Caldwell?
Jim Caldwell.
Had some success in Detroit, then they canned him. Because they wanted to bring in Matt Patricia. Also was with Peyton Manning in Indianapolis a bit. I don't know what he's up to, but he is a guy.
I'd give him like probably like a six.
Okay.
Like I think you bring him in at least for a cup of coffee to see what he's all about.
What about a guy like Chuck Pagano? I mean, I'm pretty sure all he does is like his hits with Pat McAfee once a week.
I feel like we're really scraping the bottom of the barrel.
I'm just trying to find guys
I appreciate
that have zero relationship to the New England
Patriots.
Out
of all of them, who would you want to bring in if you can bring one of those guys in?
One guy in?
Yeah. A lot of these guys are McAdoo level. Like, you have been through an experience like this. Who's actually going to come in and help Mayo out and bring something of real value into the locker room, especially when you're trying to establish a culture? Because that's the one thing that I think with Mayo
has been
the biggest disappointment to me. You knew that he was going to struggle trying to get a grip on some of the game management stuff because he hasn't done it from a head coaching perspective before. You knew that he was going to have a huge learning curve with the offense. He's never been an offensive coach or an offensive player, so he'd have to have somebody come in who basically manages all of that, and he'll learn as it goes along. But I thought the one thing he'd be able to do was have the culture. Like, that's kind of what we were sold on, that he's that guy.
Yeah.
And that guys are going to run through a brick wall for him. Well, they might, but they might do it, you know, on the wrong cadence and the wrong snap count, and then they get a flag for running through the wall.
I think I really think I want to bring in a guy like Jim Caldwell. Like, I think that's like the perfect kind of mentor for Gerard Mayo, a guy who went through a lot of different situations in the NFL. Like, he was with the Colts when, I'm pretty sure when they tanked, he was the head coach at the time. Then they get Andrew Luck. Oh no. He was with Peyton Manning at the end there. Then he was there for when they tanked, and then they canned him and brought in
Chuck
Pagano.
But is it more important to have a mentor for Mayo, or to have somebody who's going to be, say, an offensive mind who works with Drake?
So right now, the clearer need is a mentor for Mayo, just because I do think that as much as Alex Van Pelt's play calling leaves a lot to be desired, I think he's doing a good job developing Drake and mentoring Drake May. And so he deserves credit for that. So to me, the more important need is a guy that can show Gerard Mayo how to do the job. Like, again, Gerard Mayo is learning on the job. The Crafts hired a guy that was entirely inexperienced, had absolutely, I don't want to say no right, but like, no precedent to be a head coach in the NFL.
It was a huge promotion.
A huge leap of faith. And he needs to learn a lot. And so for me, if you want him to succeed, the more important option right now is to find a mentor for Gerard Mayo. And I think a fellow African-American head coach in the NFL who went through a lot. He's only a senior assistant for the Carolina Panthers right now. He's with a couple teams. He was in a lot of different situations. I think he would be an excellent resource for a coach like Gerard Mayo.
How much of Gerard's, like, we know Gerard's an authentic guy, and that's a huge strength of him. How much do you think his struggling to establish the culture and direction of the team and just, like, the identity of the team is because he's trying to stay away from the Bill stuff so much?
I think that is probably, like, 50% of it.
Because the ironic thing is,
they tried to pivot so hard away from it that it was almost handcuffed him into, like, one direction.
And the strange thing is that his training camp was harder than any camp that Bill ran over the last 5 years.
Absolutely.
I mean, they had practices that went over 2 hours, the ton of hitting, like ton of tackling to the ground, ton of like pads at every time that they could. It was a harder camp than Bill's run in the last couple years. And so it's kind of strange that that take them to the hill that they kept trying to do in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, where's that gone? That disappeared.
Anything that they kind of like start doing, it kind of feels like it just fizzles out or disappears.
So I think in large part it's also just because Gerard has said it on our show, like, winning cures kind of everything. And if you continued to win with that mentality, I think that would have resonated more and it would have stuck. But unfortunately, you win and then you lose like four in a row, but five in a row. I don't think it hits as hard.
Doesn't some of that kind of feel like reverse engineering from somebody like people like us, like the media or fans, when you're looking back on it? In the first year, everybody thinks Dan Campbell is a total boob and
3-13.
Ridiculous. And then in retrospect, we all look at it and go, look at what they were able to do in the second year and look what he did with golf and look at the culture that he established always going for it. Look at how aggressive he is. Look at the investment in the offensive line and all these things to explain the success that they had. I think it's just much harder to feel that in real time. So we just kind of look back and reverse engineer the explanation for it.
Yeah, and you're probably right, but it's hard to, at least with Dan Campbell, right? He had a very experienced GM and making really good selections at drafts.
And he had all his coaches were former players.
Exactly.
He was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have all football guys.
And guys with just like experience. Guys. Like Aaron Glenn's a guy that's been around now for a while. Like it feels like Aaron Glenn has kind of, you know, done his time and been experienced. And he's, you know, one of the best coaches, coordinators in football right now on the defensive side of the ball. That Lions defense, even without Aiden Hutchinson, has been great. And so I look at these, I look at the Dan Campbell situation. I felt like, wow, he had talent. You know, they're drafting Penei Sewell. They're hitting on the draft picks. They revived a quarterback who had kind of been a top pick, but like kind of was crummy on the way out. Like they literally wanted to upgrade from him to Matt Stafford to the point where like, yeah, we'll send you draft picks in order to take Jared Goff. And they kind of revived things. Whereas I feel like here it's completely starting from scratch. There's nothing. Like you haven't even hit on draft picks in recent years.
Yeah.
The draft picks you have had haven't been successful. It's just the young quarterback talent.
Well, Gonzo is a successful pick.
Sure.
That's pretty much the only one that really jumps to mind, unless you're thinking of Ramondre, and even that was years back at this point.
Yeah, and then you gave him a bad contract.
Yeah.
Like a 4-year, $36 million contract was still
to this day.
And
it's kind of hard to like bend over backwards, patting yourself on the back for hitting on a running back.
Yeah, unless he's Saquon Barkley, and he's going to be like the offensive player of the year, or possibly the MVP. That's the only time you can actually pat yourself on the back. That's it. With a guy like Ramondre, I don't think you can do that, especially when you can find, you know, Tyrone Tracy's of the world in the fifth round. Or Brian Robinson's in the mid rounds. Like, it's just, I think there are so many more options. And so you look at this team and it's like, okay, cool. We have Drake and Gonzo. Where do we go from here?
Well, and that brings it to the point where I wrote about this last week, like how extremely bad the Patriots have been at drafting receivers and tight ends over the last decade is well documented. But when you look at the rest of the AFC, when you compare them to the rest of the conference since 2015, nobody is as bad as them. Not a single team in the AFC has had as many misses as them. Like, most teams hit in that point on at least three, somewhere around an average of three weapons, and the Patriots maybe have one in DeMario Douglas.
Yeah, it is. It has been a brutal drought for the Patriots front office when it comes to draft picks. 617-779-7937. It's Shimon Mego here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. We will wrap up this wonderful, wonderful program coming up next.
This is WEEI.
Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app. And take Boston Sports Original everywhere you go.
Yeah. And you say Shy City. Shy City.
It's Shimon Mego here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Taking you up until BC pregame here at about 2:30. Final segment for us. Bego, it's been fun. I'm glad you were able to make it in today. I know.
Me too.
No, I know you were running a little late, but it's okay. I was able
Sorry.
To.
It's just, you know, holiday scheduling. Sometimes the system gets a little wonky.
Hey, things happen, you know, it's fine. I thought until I think like yesterday I was working with Fitzy, so it's fine.
Again, yeah. It's just, you know.
I didn't.
We make it. We all make it work. We're all a team.
Yeah, I'm excited. We'll be on WEEI Football Sunday again tomorrow.
Yes.
So if you're hanging around tomorrow morning prior to the Pats game, make sure to tune in. 10 to 1, WEEI Football pregame. Mega will be there up until about 11:15 or so. We'll talk to Tom Curran. We'll talk to Andy Hart. We'll talk to Fitzy. We'll talk to everybody. Well, hopefully we'll get Wiggy's keys. I don't really know if those are there or not, but hopefully we will. So we'll get you ready for Pats Colts tomorrow morning, 10 to 1 as well. John Lyons will join in the second half of the program with me as well. Christian Arcand, however, sick with pneumonia, so he will not be with us tomorrow.
Arcand, he's got it, like, I don't know. He needs to start some kind of Eastern medicine. Like, he needs acupuncture or, like, aromatherapy or something.
So when I was in London, we walked through...
that guy gets everything.
We walked down this street in, like, Cecil Court, and there was a bookstore. And Lauren's like, oh, I love books. Let's go in. I want to look. But they were all like spiritual books. I feel like that's the store Arcand needs to go to. He needs to go find like a spiritual book, maybe a meditation book, an acupuncturist.
Oh, you think this is like stress related that he gets sick so often?
Definitely. I think sickness involves a lot of stress sometimes. The more stressed you are, the more sick you can get a lot of the times.
So I think it's all related to sleep. And he's got a little kid.
Well, so maybe he needs... Oh, that's true, yes.
Because I know other people who have small children, and they get sick, but they don't get sick as much as Arcand does.
Yeah.
And I used to make fun of Arcand, and then I got norovirus, and it hit me in the middle of an afternoon show.
Oh, no.
And I was like, I'm never making fun of Arcand again for missing work, for being sick, because I was so miserable. But I do feel like if you don't get enough sleep and you have a little kid, and that's probably the case, your body gets sick a lot more quickly.
So as someone who wakes up very early in the morning, I just don't get a lot of sleep during the week. It just doesn't happen for me because our show is so early in the morning, and then I have to stay up late to watch all these different sporting events and blah, blah, blah. But I don't sleep a whole lot. I feel like I don't get sick all that often. Like, I get sick here and there, like any normal person. But, you know, every year I'll get strep throat almost like clockwork in the fall.
Yeah, you were saying that often.
Yeah, yeah. When the seasons change, even sometimes in the spring, occasionally, but not as frequently. But almost every single fall, I get strep throat, like, on the dot at the end of October. And I'm just like, hey, I just need amoxicillin. I'll be good. Thank you.
Should just keep it in the house. I don't know if that's the kind of thing that you can just stock up on yearly.
I don't think so, because I think those antibiotics kind of go bad after a certain amount of time.
Okay, well, all that is a long way to say that Arcand's not going to be on tomorrow.
No, he won't be.
He's ill.
So, yeah, you'll have to deal with more of my annoying voice with you, and then Mega will be with us, and then John Lyons will be with us as well. But we were talking about the New England Patriots. Let's wrap this up a little bit more. So you do believe Jerod Mayo will be here next
year.
Do you think the leash extends to a third season? Even if we see something similar to this year next year?
I think if it's similar to this year, you can't extend to a third season.
Yeah.
I think that just becomes a situation where it looks like you're being irresponsible as the guardian of the franchise that Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft believe themselves to be. So I think that you're fooling yourself if you think that Jerod Mayo is going to be out after this season. No matter what you want, like, you might as well just move beyond that. If you're a fan and you don't like the job that Jerod Mayo is doing,
like, be a fan of another team.
Well, you got to embrace reality and think about, well, what can they do to improve the situation, which is what we've been talking about. And here's the other thing is, I will argue on behalf of the raw deal that Jerod Mayo has gotten. And I heard Courtney on the morning show compare this to the way that we talked about Mac Jones. Now, in the end, I don't think Mac Jones was good, like, at being a starting quarterback. So
I don't think Mac Jones got a raw deal.
Well, the second year he did with the, and I don't want to go back and like renegotiate.
Okay, so to be completely fair, like,
he had Matt Patricia as his coordinator. That's a raw deal.
So it is and it isn't. I want to just, this is not to defend Matt Patricia, but the offense wasn't horrendous. Like, it wasn't good, but it wasn't horrendous. Mac Jones made it horrendous.
Right. No, and again, like, when you look back, hindsight's 2020, and a lot of people said this at the time, so it's not everybody looking at it in hindsight. Like, I'm sure that you were seeing it as it was.
Yep.
But at the same time, it's a tough situation. Most quarterbacks in their second year would not want their defensive coordinator to take over their offense.
Sure.
If you ask them.
Yeah.
And so, similarly with Jerod Mayo, he's in a bad situation. The roster is awful. I don't have a ton of confidence in the front office about what they're going to be able to do this offseason. But I don't want to be in a situation next year where we're looking at it and going, well, they made really bad moves in the offseason again, or they missed out on this, or now this draft class looks even worse than it did last year. Like Javon Baker, Jalen Polk, these guys have not even been able to sniff the field in their sophomore seasons. And that's not Gerard Mayo's fault. Okay, it's not Gerard Mayo's fault, but at some point, when it's not working, like, everything has to be shaken up other than Drake May, because I assume that he's going to continue being mostly awesome.
Yeah, eventually the head coach is going to become responsible in some way. So are you on the train that at come draft time it is tackle or bust at this point? Because if you're sitting at fourth overall and you're presented with like the number one tackle and or number one receiver in the draft, let's say, you can have either. Is it just, yeah, left tackle, put in the ticket, I don't even need to think about it?
So I got to be honest, I'm not super deep on the draft boards right now. But just from an abstract view, yes. I think that if you can get a tackle that looks like a turnkey tackle, which is just hard to find anywhere else than maybe the first two rounds of the draft and really the first round of the draft, because of the way that these offensive linemen are developed in college, and then when you get into training camp, the minimal amount that you're allowed to do with them because of safety procedures and all these things that have been put into by the Players Association about health and safety in training camp. It's really hard to get somebody who's going to be a turnkey tackle, who's going to be ready to go. And those guys just don't show up in free agency as often as you like. And so I do think that that's just a better use of that position. Mm-hmm. And then being able to, you see wide receivers shake loose a lot more commonly than you see starting tackles, and that's just where I'd go.
Yeah, to kind of put it in terms of a pass draft, right? So like you had Jamar Chase versus Penei Sewell, two guys who are undoubtedly all pros at their position, even now in the end, when you look at it years later, like these guys are both studs. It's let's take the offensive lineman to build that identity, because I don't think that there's, I mean, I know for a fact, there's not a receiver in this draft that Drake May is going to have the immediate chemistry that Joe Burrow had with Jamar Chase.
Is there a receiver who's comparable to Jamar Chase? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, like Tet McMillan from Arizona is really good. I really like him, but I think he's more like, I don't know, like Drake London, who's like a really reliable, like 1B kind of receiver, but not Jamar, not an all-pro who's going to like set the rookie record for touchdowns scored.
And again, I just think that you're
talking... And didn't play with Drake May for 4 years.
You're talking about trying to build the foundation of the team. What is going to mean more for Drake's development? A left tackle or a receiver? I just firmly believe it's going to be a left tackle. And I know that's the boring answer. And people don't want to hear that because they want to get excited about somebody's jersey they can buy. But when you're talking about Drake developing early in his career, it's got to be the line.
So, Mego, I don't know if you know this about me. I love food. So I'm gonna do this in terms of food. I also love the Food Network. Are you a big Food Network fan?
No.
Okay. One of my favorite shows of all time.
Are you a Martha Stewart head?
No. One of my favorite shows of all time is Chopped.
Okay.
Okay. So for those who don't know,
I know Chopped.
Chefs show up and they're just handed a basket of like five random ingredients, and they're like, hey, make us a dish with these ingredients. And the chefs, because they're very good at their job, have to do that. I look at the quarterback like the chef, right? The receivers are the items in the basket. You're kind of just given what you're given, and then you have to kind of make do with it. But the offensive line is the stove, the knives, all of the stuff you use to make the meal. And if those are bad, you've simply sometimes just cannot overcome
it. If the stove doesn't turn on, you can't cook anything.
My point exactly. And so for me, it's like, just take the offensive lineman and start setting the culture. You're seeing it even right now with the Chiefs, right? Yeah, they're 11-1 now after that win against the Raiders yesterday.
I'm so mad about that win still.
Same. It's miserable. But when you look at that team, offensively, they're horrendous. And it's not because they don't have talent. Like, they have Travis Kelce, DeAndre Hopkins, Xavier Worthy's a first-round pick, Kareem Hunt, Isaiah Pacheco's back now, and they have the best quarterback on the planet. But Patrick Mahomes was visibly frustrated in that game with the offensive line play. Mm-hmm. The one Super Bowl they went to and lost was because the offensive line got dominated by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
And here's the thing, Shyman, like, I don't have to explain this to you, but I do feel like we're speaking the same thing, and I just want to defend it further.
Sure.
Is that people, when they hear offensive line, they think all it is protecting the quarterback. Like, well, you have a mobile quarterback.
So much more than that.
He can run these boots, and he's fine, and, like, you know, this isn't isn't like having Tom Brady or even Mac Jones back there or anybody who's going to be a statue. And it's like, yeah, but what about the running game? What about being able to give Drake the minute to process and go through and get on the same page with these receivers, which they haven't been able to do?
Look at Saquon Barkley with the Eagles.
How about just being able to get creative? You can't really scheme up pre-snap stuff when guys don't know when the ball is getting snapped.
Yeah.
Like, it all starts, your functionality of your offense has to start there. It's not just about protection of the quarterback.
And it also creates a more unpredictable offense. You look at the Detroit Lions. It's the one team in football that on like 3rd and 6, they could legitimately run a running play at you because they know they can pick it up because their offensive line is awesome. And then their running backs just follow the holes. Like, David Montgomery isn't this amazing running back. He's not. Jahmyr Gibbs is probably better, but David Montgomery is not an amazing running back, but he looks awesome in that Lions offense because the offensive line is great. Saquon Barkley with the Giants. It didn't make sense for the Giants to re-sign him, but a team like the Eagles was a great offensive line and pretty good
for years and years.
Yep. They bring Saquon Barkley in, and he's an MVP candidate. Like, he's awesome. And that's because the offensive line kicks ass. For years, Kyle Shanahan has had a killer offensive line, and that run game has been dynamite, whether it was Raheem Mostert or Christian McCaffrey or Jordan Mason or whoever it was at running back, or Matt Breida. They were awesome because the offensive line kicked ass, and it allowed Kyle Shanahan to scheme it up properly. And so I think that alone would create a whole new dynamic for this offense that they, I mean, the run game has been atrocious this year. Abominable at times.
And again, then it all comes back to, well, look what Alex Van Pelt is drawing up. And blah, blah. Yeah, I'm not in love with Alex Van Pelt's offense. It's also just not completely my taste in an offense.
And he might be limited by the talent.
A lot of it is limited by the talent.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of what it boils down to. So there's a lot for the New England Patriots to fix up. But for now, they got to deal with what they've got. They've got to reach into their basket and pull out a daikon and make soup. I guess. I don't know. I was trying to do more of the chopped analogy. It didn't really work.
I didn't even know what that noun was that you
used. A daikon?
What is that?
Like a radish. Daikon radish.
Okay.
I've never even heard that word. Yep. That'll do it for Shime and Mego here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. But keep it locked right here. We got BC pregame as they take on Pitt today. Go Coach Bill O'Brien. I hope the best for you, bud. He's on the Greg Hill Show every Thursday morning, so we'll talk to him later this week. But me and Mego will be back tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. with WEEI Football Sunday. We'll see you then.